Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Sullivan. Hope you're doing well today. Coming up on our program, Ford versus Smokey on the scandal over long-term care home inspections.
I've been taking bullets every day for the union. The truth of the matter is they were refusing to go into these homes.
Did the union workers refuse to do on-site inspections during the peak of the COVID crisis? Did it endanger lives? Or did the province know all along that the residents were vulnerable and are now looking for a scapegoat as criticism mounts? The head of the union, who the premier just called out, Warren Smokey Thomas, joins us with a new letter that he sent to the premier back in April warning of the dangers to come. And then police kill an African-American man on camera. It has sparked mass outrage. Check this out.
Brother, in broad daylight, people had to film that. People had to see that. People pleaded for his life.
That is George Floyd's brother. George Floyd was killed while being detained by police in broad daylight, literally under the knee of an officer, while other police officers looked on and did nothing. Protests have erupted demanding justice and the prosecution of police officers. We'll take you to Minneapolis. We'll speak with an advocate who knew Mr. Floyd personally and has been on the front lines of the protests calling for no violence. And Chinese retaliation?
There are a number of further legal steps available to Ms. Meng that she will undoubtedly avail herself of.
After the Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou lost a key court battle yesterday, experts warned Canada should brace for retaliation. Will Canada change its policy toward China? Canada's ambassador to the United Nations, and that was the Prime Minister, chairing a United Nations meeting today. He'll join us soon. All that plus David Frum has a new book out called Trumpocalypse. There it is, right here. And the U.S. president is taking big action against social media companies like Twitter just a couple of minutes ago. What does it mean for social media? David Frum will drop by, talk about all that. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. Well, Premier Ford put some blame for the horrific conditions.
Every time people ask me that question, you know, I understand they were scared. This is in April. This was the peak of COVID, and all heck was breaking loose, and they were nervous about their families.
Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, put some blame for the horrific conditions in some long-term care homes onto union members today. The Premier claimed unionized government inspectors refused to go into these care facilities back in April to carry out on-site inspections during the pandemic. And he says they need to be accountable. He also called out the union head, Smokey Thomas, who quickly afterwards released an April 22nd letter that the union wrote to the premier. In the letter, it said there are only 164 inspectors for 626 long-term care homes, and that the inspectors were not properly trained or properly protected to function during the pandemic. He also wrote, quote, the inspections would not provide us with any more information than we don't already have, going on to say residents are not receiving the care they need, and that the privately run long-term care centers had no plan for the pandemic. So, did the union fail? Or did the government fail? Let's find out one perspective. Smokey Thomas is the president of that union. Doug Ford was talking about the Ontario Public Service Employees Union. He joins us from Toronto. Smokey Thomas, good to have you back on the program. What was your reaction when you heard Doug Ford say he was no longer going to take bullets for the union workers?
I just about fell off my chair. Not only has he not taken bullets for frontline workers, the inspectors, we've actually helped him dodge many bullets. I believe the premier should have read the April the 22nd letter we wrote to him and to the Minister Fullerton. We've never received a response. They did circulate that letter, the government did, I guess, to the media in Toronto here today. I could give you a quick synopsis of what's happened here. I know there's a whole bunch of bureaucrats in the Ministry of Long-Term Care and the Ministry of Labor that have known for a long, long time that there's problems in long-term care. Back in the Liberal years, they laid off nursing home inspectors. They changed the inspection protocols. They reduced the number of inspections. The Tories, didn't do anything to fix that. So I think there's a whole group of bureaucrats, particularly in the Ministry of Long-Term Care, that stuck their collective foot in the premier's mouth today. I don't like seeing anybody made to be look bad, because it's not true. Our inspectors
but
have
sir,
never...
But we're just respectfully, people should look bad because thousands of people are dead. And the premier said yesterday, he goes, until the military blew the whistle, I never thought it was that bad. Even in your April 22nd letter, you said we don't need to do on-site inspections. The union inspectors did not go to those sites. Should they have been there to warn how bad things are have been, or because it took the military to expose that?
So, well, Evan, so to back up a bit, so we already knew what was wrong. And I think most people in the healthcare industry, in the labor union movement, we've known for 20 years, over 20 years, what's wrong in our nursing homes, long-term care homes. So it's not like people didn't know. It's not like these bureaucrats didn't know. I would fault the premier for listening to somebody else without calling us and saying, hey, is this true? Because it's not true. Our inspectors have never refused to go in. What we put in that April the 22nd letter was some cautions. First off, they didn't have protocols, procedures, proper protective equipment for the inspectors. Some of the inspectors would be going into nursing homes that was not their genre, that was not their expertise in nursing homes. It was other parts of the healthcare system or Ministry of Labor. So they needed to have some training. They needed to have and be told what to do when they go in there. It's management that told them to phone the homes. Right, to not go in. And they, at one point, they told them, the bureaucrats said to our members, well, just go up to the home and knock on the door and ask for a mask. Well, back in April, they didn't have masks. And back in on April the 14th, the minister, the chief medical officer of health said, workers in long-term care can only work in one home. Well, management in the Ministry of Long-Term Care and Labor wanted workers to inspect 4 to 5 homes without proper equipment, right,
But I'm just, a lot of people are saying, you know, everyone's now defending what they did. Why, if the inspecting was so good, if everyone knew, why did it take the military to come out with these horrific reports and expose this? Why did it take the death of thousands of people, sir?
Well, that is, I guess that's the question that's going to haunt a lot of people for a very long time. Evan, we highlighted, my union has highlighted the concerns in these facilities for years and years. I mean, I'm on the record, lots of fights with Kathleen Wynne, Dalton McGuinty over these homes for years. In that April the 22nd letter, we highlighted all the things that the military, not specific details of individuals, but all the issues in there. And there have been inspections, Evan. The ministry asked for volunteers. Some of our over 30 of our members volunteered to go and start doing inspections 3 weeks ago, even though they didn't have all the equipment that they should have. And my chief of staff spent 7 hours on the phone yesterday with the premier's chief of staff, sorting out how to do it, because there should be inspections in these homes for 2 weeks. They still don't have the proper equipment, the PPEs, to keep themselves safe, but more importantly, to keep the residents and other people in the home safe. And they should. And he's finally realized and said they'll just go into one home, not 4 or 5, and be
okay.
Spreader, right?
Smokey Thomas, just real quick.
Yeah.
Should the Minister of Long-Term Care, Minister Fullerton, should she have known all this? Is it fair to say this was her responsibility and there were letters back in April that the idea that no one knew how bad it was, is that bogus? Should she have known? Should she have informed the Premier a lot earlier?
Evan, she should have known. And if she didn't, then heads in that ministry should roll. Deputy ministers should be leaving, assistant deputy ministers, directors. They should have known. Had she read the letter, had the premier read the letter, they would have known. They would have known.
Okay, and last thing. Did Doug Ford ever tell you directly he had concerns with the union, with the decisions union members were making during the pandemic? In other words, back in April? Or is this now a kind of retroactive history? At the time, did he say, no, get in there? Did you ever have a conversation?
No, never did. And so I don't know why he did what he did today, but he didn't look too sharp. And what he says is just not true, Evan. And I stand by that letter, April 22nd. And, you know, Evan, if there's ever an inquiry, I hope I get called as a witness, because I'll tell you something. There's a lot of bureaucrats in both these ministries that need to be held to account, and I damn well will hold them to account.
All right, so I got to leave it there. I appreciate your time today. That is Mr. Smokey Thomas, the head of the union. Sir, always good to have you on the program. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. I appreciate your interest.
All right. Meantime, tensions remain very high in Minneapolis after some peaceful demonstrations over the death of an African-American man turned violent last night. A warning. Some of the images in this story may be, and in some cases, they should be, disturbing. Buildings were burned, stores were looted, but it's important to know what sparked all this. This is the key. The death of a man named George Floyd happened right near the scene of this situation. Mr. Floyd was arrested by police officers. Look at this video. And then in this widely seen video footage, we're not going to show it all, a white police officer pinned Mr. Floyd down by the neck. Mr. Floyd pleaded he could not breathe multiple times. Four officers watched. Eyewitnesses watched. Floyd was killed. It is horrifying to see that video. The protesters called for the prosecution of these four police officers involved, calls that have been echoed by the mayor. It sparked a criminal investigation. And according to reports, Floyd moved to Minneapolis in pursuit of a better life. It was the city, ultimately, where he was killed in police custody. Protests now continue in response to the tragedy. We're joined by one voice on the ground, Mr. Trehearne Pollard. He knew George Floyd well. He spent 17 hours at the protest yesterday. But he's the lead activist in a movement called We Push for Peace. It's a nonprofit aimed at advocating for those in the inner city peacefully. He met with the mayor of Minneapolis and the chief of police, and he joins us now. Mr. Pollard, first of all, thank you. I'm so sorry for the loss of your friend. You knew George Floyd well, and I know we're getting some audio issues here. What was your reaction, sir, when you saw your friend die on that video? Yeah, I got you. I got you perfectly, sir.
It was very disheartening, man. Very disheartening. And what was more disheartening about it was that you had three other officers that stood there and actually watched it. So it was very disheartening to see that young man lose his life for no reason at all. That could have totally and utterly been prevented.
Trey, Mr. Pollard, tell us a bit about George Floyd. I want to get to the situation, but I don't want to lose sight of the humanity of the man.
Yes, which is my message that I've been conveying at the protest all day. I've been out here since about 8 o'clock this morning. And, you know, he was a gentle giant. He was peaceful. He was full of love, man. And he had resurrected his life and gave it to the Lord. So what I'm trying to get the protesters to understand is that if we're protesting and we're standing for George Floyd, then guess what? That's exactly what the protest should exemplify.
But, sir, you know, there's a long and tragic history of African-Americans dying at the hands of police. Can you understand why the frustration with what's happened has boiled over into the kind of scenes we've seen with the looting and the fires? I'm not suggesting you could ever justify that, or, and I know you don't advocate for it, but do you understand that level of anger?
I totally do. I mean, again, you know, I'm from the south side of Chicago. I lived that life. I was a part of that life. I did 10 years in prison. So trust me, if don't nobody understand, I understand. But I also understand that, unfortunately, these things have a process, and we have to let that process play out. Not to mention, everything that we burning up and tearing up is in the same community in which we live in. And not to mention, Cub Foods, Target. They employ 25,000 African-Americans in the Twin Cities area. So now, along with the pandemic, we've been off work for about 3.5 months. Now we're going to be off work for another 6.5 months. All I'm saying is it's a way that you express your frustration and your anger. And tearing up your own community in which you live in is not one of the ways to do it, period. And George would not have wanted that at all.
George would not have wanted it. But sir, what about justice? Some folks there will say there is no way to get justice here. And that is why the anger boils over. How do you get justice when you witnessed a videotape that happened to your friend, Mr. Floyd?
So one of the things we did at the first meeting, 8 hours after the incident occurred, we met with the mayor and the chief of police. One of the demands was to fire all four of the police officers. It happened within 8 hours of the incident. Secondly, we are advocating and we are standing strong in regards to charging them and making sure that they're prosecuted. And So I just got news just a second ago from a radio host that the FBI should be on the podium right now and that they are charging them and they will be arrested today.
Mr. Pollard, you and I are going to continue our discussion. We are going to watch for that. If indeed the charges are laid against these four officers, we will take it live. Mr. Pollard, I appreciate your time and your account of George Floyd. I'm sorry for your loss. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you guys for having me, man. I really appreciate it, man. This thing is happening around the world, man. And for you guys to reach out to me, man, I really appreciate it, man, because it means a lot.
Thank you, sir. It is happening around the world, and we're going to go right to Toronto, where the family's lawyer of a Toronto woman who fell from a balcony is speaking now. There's a lot of tension around this situation. Let's go to that right now.
On Wednesday, May 27th, 2020, at approximately 5 p.m., a 911 call was made by a concerned mother for the safety and well-being of her child, Regis Korchinski-Paquette. Regis was in distress over a family conflict, and her mother sought police assistance to bring calm to the situation. Once police arrived at the residence, they met Claudette, her mother, Regis, and Reese in the hallway of 100 High Park in Toronto. Claudette pleaded with police to provide assistance to her daughter and take her to CAMH to provide mental health support, as Claudette did not want the problem to escalate where it became unsafe. Words were exchanged between Regis and the police officers, and Regis stated she had to use the bathroom and went into her apartment. Her brother, who was also present, witnessed multiple police officers enter the unit after Regis went in. When her brother attempted to get her, he was stopped by police from entering the unit. After approximately 1 to 2 minutes, the mother and the brother heard commotion in the apartment and then heard Regis cry out, "Mom, help! Mom, help! Mom, help!" After that, mother and brother heard silence. Eventually, an officer came out of the unit, knocked on the neighbor's door, and stated to the family that she is over at the neighbor's house or in the unit below. After a few moments, the mother then asked the officers if her daughter is on the ground. An officer went into the unit, then came back out and told her mother, yes, she is on the ground. The family is distraught over the senseless loss of life and wants justice for Regis. The family wants answers to what happened. How can a call for assistance turn into a loss of life? The family wants to ensure camera footage from the hallway is secured by the SIU. The family is extremely concerned that in recent times, people with mental health distress issues across North America are ending up dead after interactions with the police. There has been a large outpouring of support online in the community, which is a testament to Regis's effect on people. She was proud of her Ukrainian and Nova Scotian heritage, was a talented gymnast, and used her skills to teach children and give back, and volunteered selfishly at her church and was a well-known pillar of her congregation. She is loved and will be missed by her father, Peter Korchinski, mother, Claudette Korchinski Beals, sister Shina, Shantiga, Renee, and brother Reese, and her 12 nieces and nephews. A GoFundMe page has also been set up to assist the family in this time of need. If there's any questions from the media, there's limited information that I can provide at this point, but we are willing to answer a few questions.
Would you like to share the GoFundMe site information?
Yes. I will send the GoFundMe information. It is... It is named Justice for Regis at GoFundMe.com. Regis spelled R-E-G-I-S.
Thank you.
Could you think we could hear from you a little bit? Do you mind?
A moment. The family has decided they do not want to speak, as this is a very emotional time for you.
I just want to say, hashtag justice for Regis. This is my sister. She means so much to me. We need to find justice for her. She means so much to me. I love you, Regis. I love you. And I'll never stop fighting for you. I promise you. I won't, okay? Fuck everybody else. I will never stop fighting for you.
Does anybody else from the family want to say anything?
We were informed by an uncle earlier today that Regis had epilepsy.
Yes.
And was in the middle of a seizure that the family was having a hard time managing, and that was the reason police were called. Can you speak to that at all?
Yes, that's why I called the police.
That is why?
Yes.
That is verified. Regis did suffer from epilepsy, and mom did call the police because during that time, mental health issues do present themselves. And she called the police for assistance to calm Regis down and be able to provide any assistance, particularly at CAMH.
The uncle, Sam Brenda, mentioned this is something she's struggled with her whole life. It is difficult to control.
Not her whole life.
No.
No.
The last five years.
And it's something that has to be reminded. If after Andrew Loku's death, there's very well-documented information on how police must interact with people in mental health situations. And when they're called during COVID-19, when we know the world is in crisis, to approach a family, and their responsibility is to be sensitive. So mental health professionals from the police should have been called. With a $1 billion budget, I'm not sure why that wasn't done if it wasn't done. And those are questions that need to be answered. So regardless of Regis's mental health state, doesn't mean that she should end up dead, especially when there are multiple police officers present, the family is there present and pleading for assistance. This was not a call for a crime. There was no weapons involved. There was no danger to any police officers. So therefore, Regis's death must be explained. And at this point, it is highly suspicious.
Yeah, can you speak to...
mental health crisis team wasn't involved in this call?
We have not received any information to that extent. Nobody from the police service identified themselves as mental health crisis responders. That is something that the family will be seeking answers, and our law firm will be asking those questions.
Yeah, are you willing to speak to how many...
call the police
when
we heard from Sam as well that there were 8 officers called in. Is that abnormal as well?
No, that's not normal, because normally those many officers never come. But it is like... when she has seizures, if they're bad seizures, yes, I've had to call the police because things tend to get a little out of hand. But I asked the police yesterday if they could take my daughter to camp. H.M., my daughter ended up dead. So I don't understand.
Can people please direct questions to counsel, as the family does not wish to speak? Yeah. And if they do wish to speak, they will let me know.
Sorry,
yes, Christina. Regis's mother and brother were not allowed back into the unit after Regis went into the unit. They were in the stairwell right beside the unit, and it was very close proximity and could hear everything. They were not allowed to go inside that apartment.
And how many officers did they see going?
Approximately 5 to 8 officers.
And have you seen any surveillance video yet?
Have not seen it yet. We will be requesting that. Nobody, the family was not there inside the apartment to know what happened on the balcony.
Does it seem like we heard that she attempted to get to the neighboring balcony?
There was no attempt.
So at this point, those are the accounts of the police. That has not been verified by anyone. I can tell you this. Regis has been calling the building for weeks in an attempt to get a screen put on her balcony, as her neighbor has a screen. She's had very strong concerns about the safety of the balcony. Therefore, it is highly unlikely that Ms. Regis Korchinski-Beals, Paquette, would attempt to climb over a balcony when she has been asking for security on that balcony.
Can you tell us what you mean by a screen? Is it like a barrier you're referring to?
Like a mesh.
It's a mesh that goes around the balconies to prevent
called a balcony net.
Anything from getting inside the balcony?
There have been allegations of there being a racial component to this. Are you backing that up, or is this mostly a mental health issue that you feel was not dealt with well?
At this point, the family knows that they called for assistance from the police, and their daughter ended up dead. At this point, we cannot determine whether racial elements are involved or not, but there's a definite mental health component and a responsibility on police officers to ensure that people are safe when they call for assistance.
Through UNIA, we've chatted with the pastor, we've chatted with friends. Is anyone, any of the family members, comfortable sharing some details as to what kind of woman Regis was? The uncle, the pastor, described her as a very sweet woman. She was involved in the church community. If that's something, just to honor her memory, that anyone in the family is comfortable speaking to.
Thank you, Christina. I'll ask the family. Somebody want to say something? Do you want to say anything about your sister?
Anybody want to speak?
Who wants to speak? Did you want to say something about it?
I'm not sure it's appropriate.
Did you want to say something about it?
And if you could just please tell us your name.
Or your relationship.
I was a very good friend of Regis. Paquette. We had just recently gotten back into contact, and I'm in a lot of shock. I don't think there are a lot of women with the type of character my friend had, besides maybe those within our family standing behind me, as well as the men that I consider to be on that same level of awareness. It is very rare that you encounter a revolutionary spirit who wouldn't hurt a petal on a flower. Regis is the type of person to hop in front of a bus for a trail of ducks. Almost a godsend angelic being. And to be standing at this place right now, all I can say is that I'm happy my friend will be recognized as the beautiful entity she is. And I want everyone to know, on behalf of her family and everyone else who resonates with her story, this isn't over.
One more thing about when the police arrived. If you could just go over, Regis, her brother and her mother were all in the hallway to meet the police, but Regis wasn't happy to see them. Or can you just go over what happened when police arrived?
I'll briefly restate what happened when police arrived, but in a limited fashion. Police arrived in the elevator. Claudette and Regis were by the elevator. They met with the police. They spoke with police, and Reese was down the hall. Everyone started moving down the hallway, and then Regis and the police had words with each other. And that's when Regis wanted to go into the apartment to use the bathroom. And at that point, the police followed her into the unit. And when Reese and mother wanted to enter the apartment, they were prevented from doing so. Within a few moments, they heard commotion, and then they heard, "Help me, help me, help me."
And it's the way that they went into the apartment. It's the way they went into it, how aggressively they went in there after a girl that is
100 pounds.
It's the way that they went in there.
We should.
Can you confirm if there were any talks in the hallway with the family?
There were at least one officer restraining the family from entering the unit.
I'm not sure if people at home are as familiar with your background. I mean, you're someone, we met years ago because you were carded yourself, and I mean, you've been involved with the community. I'm wondering, and you commented on the SIU and Andrew Loku, do you have confidence in the process in terms of the police investigation is essentially not the investigation taking place when you consider the SIU mandate has been invoked?
Statistically, the SIU has cleared over 90% of the cases that are presented to them. That is a major concern for a community that has been plagued by violence and plagued by police violence. It will be interesting to see what the SIU comes out with in this report, but one thing that I would like to ensure is that the SIU retrieves all the cameras from the building, because we know in the Andrew Loku situation, the precise moment of Andrew Loku being shot was not available on the video, somehow deleted. So that is a concern. We do have faith. I am a lawyer. I have faith in the justice system. But at the end of the day, statistics prove and show how effective certain measures are. And the SIU has a responsibility to the people of Ontario to uphold accountability towards police officers. And police officers who swear an oath to the community have a responsibility to ensure they protect anybody they come in contact with. So as Reese was saying, the way that they approached Regis is a concern for him from his perspective and vantage point. And that is something that seriously has to be looked at, because we've heard these stories far too often. And another reporter has asked about the link with race. And if we see statistically, there is a higher proportion of violence against people of color. When you intersect mental health and color, then you get an even higher percentage. And that is of major concern. And there is no reason why this family should be standing here grieving for a young lady who had her whole life ahead of her.
Amen.
And just her mother just wanted to resolve a family dispute. There is no reason why we should be standing here. And the police officers should be named, and they should be available to answer questions. Because if this had no nefarious purpose, that means there should be no issue with stating what has happened. The officers, from the accounts of the witnesses, remained there for a few minutes after they knocked on the neighbor's door and then went out to check and noticed that Regis was on the ground, according to how they present it. They left after that, a few moments. So they did not stay maybe as long, and they did not offer any assistance to the family, and nor condolences, as far as I've been given information. Pardon me?
Body cam footage.
We don't know if any of the officers had body cams, but that would be something that we would look into, and I implore Chief Saunders to ensure the body cam program gets back on track, because that's over 5 years old and haven't heard anything about it recently. Family's saying over 5 hours. I don't know. I understand she ended up on the ground at some time around 5:30, 5:25, I believe the reports are saying. I'm not sure at what time she was removed.
10:30 to 11.
So approximately 5 to 6 hours.
Can I ask about the balcony? Because you said that 24. One of the things that she had wanted was a mesh enclosure, just like the rest of the balconies in this building, or many of them. Can you elaborate on why she wanted that?
For safety reasons. She has been calling for a week. She actually called that morning, yesterday morning, and called in an attempt to get mesh put on her balcony.
Do you know why it wasn't provided, if other balconies in the building had that?
The families informed me they believe it was because of COVID-19 was the answer that was given.
How long has the family lived in this building for?
Do you wish to divulge that? The family doesn't wish to disclose that.
There were the three siblings, Regis, Reese, and a sister and mother who lived there?
Not all the siblings, no. There's five of us.
That's unclear, and that's not anything the family wishes to disclose at this time. If there's any other questions related to the incident yesterday or the family, I am happy to answer, but I think for now we've answered all the questions that we're able to at this point. Thank you, and please keep in mind mental health and accountability, and we need answers, so anything you can do on behalf of the family to get answers, please do. And the family wants to say thank you for the outpouring of support and recognize this is an issue going across North America. This is not isolated, and police departments across North America have to do better. Thank you.
Can you confirm there's going to be a march on Saturdays? We've heard from Christy Pitts to Queen's Park. Is that something you know about?
I can't verify that at this time.
Nick, could you share with us the name of Regis's friend who spoke?
I will try to get that to you.
Or the spell, so we have the correct information. Thank you.
I don't have any cards on me.
I can give you some.
The lady who spoke, it doesn't wish to.
Her name is Courtney.
Let's go.
Okay. Courtney, could you spell it for me if you don't mind? Thank you for speaking with us. I'm so sorry for your loss.
I can read the report again.
It's very kind of you to speak on behalf of the family. Let me just call get this for my phone.
On Wednesday, May 27th, 2020, at approximately 5 p.m.
Like this.
A 911 call was made by a concerned mother for the safety and well-being of her child, Regis Korchinski-Paquette. Regis was in distress over a family conflict, and her mother sought police assistance to bring calm to the situation. Once police arrived at the residence, they met Claudette, her mother, Regis, and Reese, her brother, in the hallway of 100 High Park in Toronto. Claudette pleaded with police to provide assistance to her daughter and take her to CAMH to provide mental health support, as Claudette did not want the problem to escalate where it became unsafe. Words were exchanged between Regis and the police officer.
Okay, this is an update from the family's lawyer as the Ontario's police watchdog, the SIU, is investigating the death of a 29-year-old woman, Regis Korchinski-Paquette. She fell from an apartment balcony in Toronto's West End. The SIU unit says police entered the, there's the 24th floor residence in response to a domestic call. A news release says the officers, quote, observed a woman on the balcony. A short time later, she fell to the ground. The investigators are asking anyone with information to come forward. Now, the lawyer says that the family heard cries of help me, help me. The lawyer, who you just heard, says the death, as I'm quoting him, quote, highly suspicious. He said that Regis Korchinski-Paquette it was a mental health issue. Not sure it was a, quote, race issue. But he said she wanted a screen or some kind of mesh to prevent anyone from falling off that balcony. It was the 24th floor, not the 29th floor. She's a 29-year-old woman. And, quote, she died after interactions with the police, according to her lawyer. This happened about 5:15 p.m. on Wednesday. That was a very powerful and emotional. You saw the family, obviously, devastated by the loss of their loved ones. They are suspicious, but wanting a full disclosure of the Special Investigations Unit on this case. We got to take a short break. Coming up, can the United Nations work without the U.S.? Will Justin Trudeau take a harder stance on China before China retaliates after a judge turned down Meng Wanzhou, the Huawei executive's, plea to throw out the extradition case? We'll speak with Canada's United Nations ambassador next on Power Play. Stay with us. Recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic will take global cooperation. That is the message Prime Minister Justin Trudeau sent today as he co-hosted a United Nations summit on ways to soften the social and economic impacts of the outbreak. Over 50 heads of state joined the meeting, with one notable exception, the United States and President Donald Trump. Can a global approach work without a key G7 leader like the United States? Can Canada rely on the world's other economic superpowers, China, when relations with Beijing are at such a low point? And remember what's happening on that horrific crackdown going on in Hong Kong. Let's get some answers. Canada's ambassador to the United Nations joins us now, Ambassador Marc-André Blanchard. Thank you, sir. I hope you and the family are well, and I appreciate you joining us. Sir, what can we expect to make of the fact that the United States does not show up, the world's largest economy, in today's summit? And they see, does that send a signal to you of what?
No, I mean, thank you for having me. But I want to say that the United States of America and China have both informed us that despite the fact that they could not send their leaders today, that actually they want to collaborate and work with Canada and Jamaica and the Secretary General and the UN and the world, actually, on the process that has been proposed and launched today by Prime Minister Trudeau. You know, it's very important what has been launched today. I was just speaking to the Secretary General, who called a few minutes ago, who said to me, Marc-André, I don't remember at the UN when we, outside of the General Assembly, the annual meeting, that we had for a meeting more than 50 heads of states and heads of government coming. So that's a tribute to the leadership of Prime Minister Trudeau and Prime Minister Holness of Jamaica, that we're actually able to gather in a week. We did that in a week. We asked the world, we said, let's have a candid discussion. Because this is the pandemic and the economic crisis we're in is not the 2008 and 9 recession or economic financial crisis. It's a crisis, as the Prime Minister of Barbados says, it's about life and livelihood. 300 million people around the world so far have lost their job. They think that more than 50 million will be pushed towards extreme poverty in the coming weeks or months. And everybody said today, you know, the time is against us. There's an urgency. Everybody agreed on an urgency. Everybody agreed that actually we need to do things differently. The prime minister said to the world, we need to think out of the box. And the world said, yes, we do. But then we need to find the common ground and on some of these issues, because some of the issues will not be easy to resolve. Right. None of this is easy, as we know.
Look, respectfully, though, the United States has threatened to pull out of funding for the WHO. They don't show up to a critical meeting. We can't pretend that things are all fine. Donald Trump has a very adversarial relationship with the United Nations. As you know, this is, as President Macron of France said today, this seemed to me as much about the Europeans, the Canadians, the Commonwealth trying to shore up support for multilateralism as it's being ripped asunder by either China, Russia, and or the United States. What do you make of that?
And well, this is a problem that cannot be solved unilaterally, cannot be solved bilaterally. It needs to be solved by having everyone around the table and in discussion. There are some members that maybe, you know, will have their own, you know, way of looking at things. And I think actually the United States of America will come to the table on some issues and will probably want to be less active on some other issues. The same with China. But today what was interesting to see is that there's common ground, you know. I'll give you a few places where there's common ground. We know that small island states, we know that some island states or countries that are middle, what we call middle income country, that are not very rich, but they're not poor. They're in the middle. They often live off tourism. Those countries are badly hit at the moment, and they're more vulnerable than ever before.
Yeah,
so we need to think about measures for them. There will be no one size fits all. And so this is today what was the discussion was, we know there's money there. Right. There's money in the system in the world that exists to resolve some of the issues. The problem is,
right,
how do you channel it properly? How do you? It's not only about public and governmental resources. That's why, for example, in some cases, the American government will be interested in that. They're interested in. Okay. I'll give you one example where they will want to play because I've had those discussions with them. It's on the issue of partnership with the private sector and government. How do we work better,
okay,
and how do we leverage each other better than we've done in the past to ensure that actually there's growth in the world from an economic perspective as we come out of COVID-19?
Let me switch to China. They're an economic superpower. We have very frosty relationships. Their media, their state media has called us a puppet of the U.S. government over the Meng Wanzhou. One, have you spoken to their ambassador to the United Nations? Will Canada take a tougher stance on China? And also, given the fact of what's coming, what's happening under the COVID of darkness in Hong Kong, where the one country, two systems has now been undermined, and there's a crackdown on democratic protesters in Hong Kong that's very vicious right now. What is Canada's position? Will it stiffen against China?
Well, Canada, on this issue of the situation in Hong Kong, has expressed grave concern about the situation. We've done that today with most of our allies from the Five Eyes, what we call the Five Eyes. So this is us. In this case, we did it with Australia and with the UK and with the United States of America, and we issued a joint statement. So Canada has been incredibly clear on this issue.
A joint statement, though, sir, a lot of Canadians are wondering if the Chinese care, if those words matter. A joint statement on undermining democracy in Hong Kong. We've had a lot of statements, and two Canadians, Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, are rotting in a Chinese prison for over 500 days. Can you tell us if nothing seems to be working, what will change now for Canada's stance vis-a-vis China?
Well, in this case, actually, I think a statement means this is diplomacy in some ways, because in our terms, you had a strong statement by four countries that are important partners of China that express their grave concern about the entire situation. So this is a very strong language were used in this one. And so we will see the situation is still evolving. We've made a point, and a very strong point, and we did that with close allies of Canada. And this is the situation on this issue of Hong Kong. The other issue of the Michael Spovar and the Kovig that are in unfortunately more than 500 days that have been imprisoned in China, the government has been relentless in its diplomatic effort to do whatever it could to actually ensure that the two Michaels could come back as quickly as possible. And of course, we are disappointed with the results so far, but we'll continue to work at it.
Ambassador Blanchard, first of all, I really appreciate you joining us with that, with the latest news out of the United Nations. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, I got to leave it there. But coming up on our program, let's talk more about China. Will they retaliate over the Meng Wanzhou ruling? It's not a matter of when, some say. It's not a matter of if, it's when. The Press Gallery weighs in on that. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. After a high-profile court ruling, Canada's waiting for the other shoe to drop. We are, of course, talking about the Meng Wanzhou case as a BC judge ruled against the Huawei executive yesterday. China's embassy in Ottawa called the case a grave political incident. And they are in firm opposition to the decision. Canada maintains, rightly, this is not political, it's judicial. They are separate. Is it only a matter of time before Beijing retaliates economically and diplomatically? And is there anything Canada can do to prevent or at least soften the blow? What about the two Michaels who are held in prison for more than 500 days? The Press Gallery is here to weigh in. CTV's Molly Thomas is here. Michelle Carbert from the Globe and Mail is here. And our special guest is the former ambassador and current president of the Canadian International Council, Ben Rosewell. Great to see all of you. Ben, I'll start with you. Given how the Chinese officials and the state media have responded, do you expect retaliation from China?
Yeah, I think Canada's about to get a primer in power politics. We have a superpower that's no longer emerging. It has emerged. We have a pretty significant shift in geopolitics with COVID-19, where this newly emerged superpower wants to demonstrate that it is a superpower and that different rules apply to it. And it's going to try and make an example of Canada, not just because of its own bilateral dispute with Canada, but to make an example of us to any other country that might try and cross China. So I think we should brace for it, and we should be ready for what China has in mind for us.
What do you expect to see, Michelle, and what should Canada brace for, if Ben's right?
I couldn't agree with Ben anymore. I don't know exactly what we should be bracing for, whether we'll be on the business side of things, maybe with, you know, targeting exports like China did recently with Australia, or, you know, God forbid, the detention of another Canadian. We have seen other Canadians who have been released over time, but obviously the Michaels are the most pressing and high-profile cases right now. But, you know, this is an opportunity, for lack of a better word, for Mr. Xi to look strong at a time when China and his leadership is looking weak in the face of COVID-19.
Molly, what options does Canada have? I just spoke to the UN ambassador, and he said, you know, in the Hong Kong situation, we've written a stiff letter. Is that all we can do?
I don't know if Canada has that many options, Evan. I think China holds the cards in their hands right now. We look at, for example, the two detained Michaels arbitrarily detained for more than 500 days. I mean, the worry now is what could happen to these men. We know that we don't know all of the situations of their conditions. We know, for example, Meng is living here in Vancouver in a nice, beautiful big mansion. That's not the same for the Michaels. And then the second big player in China's hand, if they really want to retaliate, I think comes down to personal protective equipment. More than 80% of the world's personal protective equipment comes from that country. Of course, we've been trying to ramp up production here. We heard about GM making, you know, 10 million face masks here in Canada now, but we're not at a place where we can fully ramp up our production internally. And so we are at the mercy of China to an extent. And the one side that Canada has, I guess, is the support of the global community if they try to do something to us. But as we've seen before, China doesn't really seem to care what many people think about them.
Ben, to take up on that, what are Canada's options if multilateralism is kind of toothless? Maybe it isn't. What options does Canada have in the wake of what's happening in Hong Kong, the two Michaels, and, of course, potential retaliation?
Well, you know, we've got a lot of learning ahead of us. It's been a long time since we had a superpower coming after us. And even more so since we didn't have another superpower in our corner, since the United States cannot be relied on as an ally. And so we're going to have to learn the power politics game. I think in terms of what we can expect, we look to the three S's. We're going to see sanctions. So they'll probably try and take on another part of the Canadian economy, probably where it's going to hurt Prime Minister Trudeau politically the most. Second S would be subversion. We could expect an increase in Chinese surveillance and espionage activities in Canada to try and undermine confidence in our own political system among our population, possibly put Chinese Canadians in a difficult position, try to highlight any stories about racism against Chinese Canadians, anything that makes Canada look bad. And then third, I think, would be slander. The third S would be any attempt to malign our reputation on the international stage. Anything that makes us look bad, they'll highlight. They may even try to bring their campaign against our Security Council bid out into the open.
All right, Ben, I got to leave it there. Michelle and Molly and Ben, I really appreciate that. Unfortunately, we're out of time. That's your Power Play Day in politics. We'll be back in 23 short hours. Thanks so much for watching. Have a great evening. Stay with us right here on CTV News Channel.